go. All right.
Yes.
Woo! Woo! Not bad. Not bad. You smell nice, like Tide.
What's that?
Smell like Tide detergent? Do you use Tide detergent?
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into the podcast and introduce our special guest, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and officially Spotify. So smash the subscribe button. Unsubscribe, resubscribe, rate us 5 stars. Tell us you love the podcast in the comments and help us move up the podcast rankings. And we have another special guest, back-to-back episodes, we've got a special guest, Will Brinson, CBS Sports senior NFL writer. You can subscribe to his podcast, The Pick Six Pod, daily. Is that right, Will? It's every day?
Every single stinking day, even during the off-season.
Even during the off-season.
Yeah, you know, I actually find the off-season shows can be a little bit more, I mean, I love the routine of the season, but the off-season shows, you sort of plan out ahead a little bit more because, you know, you can freewheel through the NFL, and you can be a little more exploratory in terms of who you can bring on. So I can spread my guest wings a little bit more enthusiastically.
Absolutely. We feel the same way. We love the off-season pods. Don't do them as frequently as you, but it definitely gives us a little bit more freedom to talk about whatever's going on. We actually even like to talk a little bit of playoff basketball and some playoff hockey when things get a little slow. But for now, we're focusing on the Giants. We appreciate your time. We appreciate you coming on. My first question for you is, why does Dave Gettleman hate me?
You know, it's weird. So, and I now remember that we ended up connecting on this because of the Dave Gettleman thing where I went nuclear on him. And, yeah.
I'm glad you remember that.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's just been. But the weird. Here's a weird thing is that. So I grew up a Panthers fan, and I've always had a. A soft spot for the Panthers anyway. I mean, I'm not going to say claim I'm a journo now and I'm neutral. I just care more about what I pick being right than I care about maybe the Panthers winning. I will say that when the Panthers made their Super Bowl run out and eventually lost to the Broncos, I sort of I could feel the objectivity melting away because I was out on the field for the NFC Championship game. The confetti's raining down. I was like, man, this is freaking awesome. Like all I want is the Panthers to win a Super Bowl. Really the architect of that was Dave Gettleman. And for the longest time, I thought he did a tremendous job building the Panthers out, getting them back after, you know, things got really bad with Marty Herney. He came in and he built up that defense really well. He got an offensive setup that worked and got him to a Super Bowl. And I sort of thought he would go to New York and have some success because of his ability to turn around the Panthers that quickly. And he's just had this blind spot for Eli Manning and appears to have a blind spot for running backs. And I think it might ultimately be his undoing as an NFL GM because as good as Saquon Barkley is, and I don't want to blast him, he is a running back. I mean, that's the reality of it. And if you're pivoting away from Odell Beckham, a generational future of Hall of Fame wide receiver, and towards a running back, even one as good as Saquon Barkley, to me, you're inherently doing yourself and your team and your franchise a disservice in 2019. So I think that's why Dave Gettleman hates you in a weird answer.
Well, no, that's good. We definitely – we're on the same page for the most part. I think Weiss and I would challenge you a little bit on the Dave Gettleman building that contender in Carolina.
Definitely.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, he didn't draft everybody. Like, the stars of that team, Cam Newton, he didn't draft Cam Newton. Marty Herney did that. He didn't draft Josh Norman.
Keekly. Thomas Davis.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't draft the stars. But I do think that when you look at what sort of – yeah, I guess building the team is maybe the wrong way to phrase it. But when you sort of look at the meat and potatoes of that team, like the addition of you had Trey Turner that he added,
Kawan Short
Kawan Short and Starlo Tulele, yeah, were the backbone, but then the freaking hold on a second. Just give me. I'm blacking out on the name of the
no problem.
Andrew Norwell, the guard who left for Jacksonville. Yeah. He put a focus on the trenches on that team, and he got them together in short order. That's the one reason I would have optimism for the Giants too, is that his ability to find players who can succeed on the defensive line and offensive line. I mean, he could make the Giants decent again in 2019 if they have some good talent on the offensive line and defensive line. B.J. Hill is an NC State guy. I love B.J. Hill. I think he's going to be really good over the long haul. We'll see how the additions of all these different offensive linemen work. But, I mean, I think that's what he did at Carolina. He took a team that had some important stars on each side of the ball and then surrounded them with hog mollies, if you will. And
that, he loves the hog mollies.
I hate that word.
I know. See, like, for y'all, it's weird because he's like, he came down to North Carolina and he's like, it's like this guy in these big pants with this New York accent. He's like, go to the hog mollies, you know? And for us, it was like, ah, this guy is so funny and weird and different. And for y'all, it's like, this is like the guy you see in a pizzeria or a deli, you know what I mean? Like, you see him all over the place.
He sounds like a guy that typically calls onto New York radio.
Yeah, he sounds like a Francesca call.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why all the 50 plus white guys love him.
Right, but he's actually a Francesco. He's Francesco's boss.
Yes. So we've come to learn that. Yeah. But you know, in terms of the Giants' direction, and I'll agree with you a little bit there in terms of, you know, the hog molly argument. If you look at him bringing over Zeitler, drafting Will Hernandez last year, Nate Solder sort of being a necessary evil, you know, having to overpay for that left tackle spot. And, you know, it's sort of logical to think that the next step is drafting a right tackle in this draft, be it Cody Ford or someone in the second round. But that offensive line is, you know, fairly close to being complete, granted at the expense of pretty much every skill position minus Saquon Barkley. And just to backtrack a little bit more, shout out to Will, loyal listener, who I believe he was the one that dug up the tweet of me tweeting the Gettleman Analytics mocking picture at you last year, where you basically said that Gettleman might be the only guy to draft a running back in the top 10 back-to-back years. And I think that's what you were referring to earlier.
What I was referring to?
Yeah, connecting about Gettleman.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah. Did you tweet me the analytics picture? Maybe so. No, I wrote the hit piece on, not the hit piece. That's a bad way to describe my own writing.
No, we'll take it. We'll take it.
No. I mean, but like I wrote the. I was. We. I think. Yeah. Maybe it was the, him mocking the analytics dudes. But he is definitely the only GM I remember taking a running back in back-to-back drafts in the top 10, right? I mean, he took McCaffrey 8 and then Saquon 2, or McCaffrey 6 and Saquon 2, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I think – I don't – like, here's my fear is that myself and a large portion of the national media is going to spend all offseason making fun of the Giants for how badly they failed. And I think if you squint and look at this team and project what Dave Gettleman's going to do in this draft, and I think he's going to take hog mollies, whether it's defensive guys or offensive guys. Like I think it'll be a troll. It'll feel like a troll job of Giants fans, but he might take like Rashawn Gary, Amontez Sweat in this draft and just not care.
Yeah.
Like, you're quadrupling down on Eli. And if he takes Daniel Jones, all this analysis is off the table. But I just feel like he sees this team and he thinks if he adds a couple of pass rushers or a couple of guys who can generate some heat up front in that Betcher defense, that he can run the ball effectively with Saquon behind this revamped offensive line, play good defense, and eke out some sort of 9-7, 10-6 win season that is just a full-blown crotch chop, suck it, like all you nerds, type of redemption tour for Dave Gettleman. And my fear is that I can sort of see the blueprint for that. I think the Cowboys are going to be fine this year. I don't think they'll see a ton of regression, but I don't think they're going to be a 14-win team, or maybe they'll be a 10-win team. I don't think they're a 12-win team. I think the Eagles look pretty good, but I wouldn't be stunned as we sit here now if you fast-forwarded whatever it is, 8-10 months, and we're like, hey, the Giants won the NFC East. They'd be like, well, that was an unlikely outcome, but You know what? I'll take the pie in my face. Congratulations, Dave.
Well, you're certainly more optimistic than you are, Will. I'll tell you that much.
There's one like huge problem with all this, and that's the fact that the quarterback is just he's finished. And I know he might go out there and he might draft, like you said, he might go out there, he might get a couple defensive linemen, and I think they have 12 picks. I won't be surprised if 5 of those goes to the offensive and the defensive line. But I mean, with this doubling down on Eli, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I don't know if it's this belief that, I mean, I don't know if you know this, Will, but back in 06 when Ernie Accorsi retired, Jerry Reese got the job essentially over Dave Gettleman. Oh, yeah. And I don't know if it's this belief that Dave now, you know, what, 12, 13 years later, believes that he can now build that team that he didn't get the chance to build in 2007 around Eli. Maybe he's trying to do that now for like a year or 2 years. But I mean, I just don't see this team winning more than 5-6 games again this year. And personally, winning 8 games, winning 9 games would be the worst thing that could happen to this team, because it would put them so far out of the potential 2020 draft class that they're sort of in no man's land again and forced to have to, you know, possibly bring back Eli, because again, they'll say, well, there's no one better. But the botching of the quarterback position with Gettleman has just been inexcusable from top to bottom. And you wrote about it, you know, you say blind spot. That's a perfect way to sum it up, in my opinion. It makes no sense to me. What makes even more nonsense is this talk of bypassing a quarterback at 6 and taking one at 17.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't get that philosophy. And what makes it even worse is when Gettleman's, well, that stuff sort of comes out, and that whole positional value and we have to trust our board. Well, it's like, if he's not worthy at 6, what? I don't get how he's worthy at 17. I don't understand how that works, because there's no position more valuable than the quarterback position. I think that's pretty much a fact when we talk about football. And for them to sort of double down on this positional value, we have to see if value meets need, and it's just a clown show, in my opinion. And I really don't, it doesn't make any sense to me. And I sort of see them right now taking a defensive player at 6, Ed Oliver, Montez Sweat, Burns, somebody like that at 6, and then turning around at 17 and taking Daniel Jones, you know, settling for that second tier quarterback in a pretty bad class compared to last year. I think that outside of Kyler Murray and Dwayne Haskins, there really isn't like a third guy that you could say would have been a first round pick in last year's class. It might not even be worthy of a first round pick in this class, but outside of potentially Drew Lock, but I don't think Daniel Jones is worthy of a first round pick. So, I mean, what? I don't get it. So maybe you guys have a better, you know, get it more than I do, but I don't see how it makes sense to bypass one at 6 and then take one at 17.
I mean, I agree that, like, I don't, in terms of what Dave Gettleman is doing, when it's hard, sort of hard, people sort of not fail to understand this, but I think, like, I understand what he's doing in the sense of, I hear him and I hear what he's saying, and I knew that he was going to do what he's saying, because he always does what he says. And the things that he's doing sort of fit with how he operates in the first place. But I don't think what he's doing is smart at all. And I agree with you. Like, this quarterback class, here's a problem. They have they had an opportunity to get a guy in Sam Darnold, who to me is a franchise quarterback. And we could end up being wrong on him. He could end up not being great. I mean, it's a lot that goes into it, but I just feel like what he showed in his first year for the Jets certainly would make him, you know, if you redid the draft in a vacuum, I think he would probably go second overall.
Right.
You know, and look, I get it. He couldn't get Baker. Maybe he wanted Baker. I don't think any of the guys in this class, Kyler or Dwayne Haskins, I think Dave Gettleman is so entrenched in his belief in what makes a good quarterback that if he takes one of the guys in this group, it will either be Drew Lock or Daniel Jones. I don't know that ultimately those will be the guys that he wants to take. And I think he would be better off not taking one. I mean, I really do. I don't think that this quarterback group is good enough to warrant taking one at 6 or even 17. I would rather stock up on potential blue chip defensive players. Again, Dave Gettleman's strength. Like, let him identify these guys on the line or in the trenches, or even, you know, maybe it's a Devin White or somebody like that. Let him identify these guys and then try and come back in 2019 or 2020 or 2020, I guess, or 2021 and get a quarterback. And I think it's a little bit risky. It is a nightmare. You are putting all your eggs in Eli's basket, but I feel like they're just so far down that path that making a change to that approach right now would not be the most sensible thing. Does that make sense? Like,
that totally makes sense to me.
If this is going to be your plan, execute on the plan, but lay the plan out and go with it. And if you get, but the problem is, you might not get a quarterback this year, next year, or the year after. And
right.
You're just jammed, and you're starting like the course of Joe Flacco.
Yeah. The whole plan you're saying, you know, building the roster from the inside out and then going and getting your quarterback, that's all a fine thing when we talk about it and when we say it. But the thing that stands out to me is, let's say they do that. Let's say they get 3-4 blue chip defensive players. Let's say they shore up the right side of their offensive line at right tackle. And then let's say they win 8 games, 9 games, right? Well, then you're going into 2020, you know, let's say Eli retires and you're not close to getting, you're not in the top 10 or the top 5 to get, you know, Tua or Justin Herbert, you know, you're picking 16, 17, then what? Then it's like, what do I do now? Do I have to settle for Joe Flacco, or do I have to settle for Ryan Tannehill, whatever? So you're essentially wasting, you know, a lot of the young players' talent year after year by not addressing the quarterback spot. And this is why passing on one last year was such a huge mistake. And it could really hurt this team for years. And that's not taking anything away from Saquon Barkley.
No, I mean, look, that's the thing, is that you tied your ship to the Eli Manning anchor. And look, Eli's got 2 Super Bowls. I understand he's revered in New York. He has he's probably the greatest Giants quarterback of all time.
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
He's probably on the Mount Rushmore of Giants, of the Giants franchise. And that's really saying something, considering all the great people that have come through there. At the very least, he's on the all Giants team, if you're creating one. But you know, the reality is, if you look at Eli Manning's body of work, he's never been, you know, the best. He was never the best quarterback in football at any point of his career. No. And so the idea that he's just going to keep banging out, you know, big seasons is false. I mean, like, he's not going to magically become the best quarterback in football in 2019. And you have to set yourself up. Like, the franchises who have had success for the long haul, and the Giants should know this because they're one of them, have had a transition plan and have been ready for the future. And you just can't bank on Eli continuing to be decent for any length of time, given what we've seen the last 2 years. And it just feels like delusional to me. And you're right. If they win 8 games in the next 2 years, that's the worst possible scenario, because they're stuck in the middle of the draft. They don't have Saquon Barkley will be at the end of his rookie contract with 1 million carries. They won't have a franchise quarterback to hang their hat on, and they'll be lacking in generational game-changing talent, as Dave Gettleman would say, on the roster.
Yeah, and Will, one of the things that you brought up earlier, right, you were saying how, you know, we may not like it, but this is Dave Gettleman's plan, and he's going to stick to it. I think the problem that, you know, I have, and that Weiss has, and that a majority of the fan base has with that notion, is that when Dave Gettleman was hired, and by the way, that entire GM search was a giant crock of shit, because they interviewed 4 guys, 3 of whom were either in the organization or were previously in the organization. One who was immediately fired as soon as Dave Gettleman took over. Is that when Dave Gettleman took over, his entire thing was, you know, if what I saw with Eli wasn't a mirage, and I don't think it was, you know, he's got years left. And that team last year was supposed to be competitive. It was supposed to compete for the division, compete for, you know, in the playoffs, and to go into that season and quickly at the middle of the season realize, oh shit, I was very, very wrong. Let's start selling off all valuable assets to get at least something back, right? For that guy to come in here and say, this is my plan, and then 8 weeks later turn around and say, oh, well, you know, that plan was not just wrong, but very, very wrong. Couldn't have been more wrong. To go into this season with a new plan, it's just very hard for the fans to trust him. Now, one thing that I'm curious about, and you also brought it up earlier, was if Dave Gettleman says it, he's going to do it. And this has been a pain point of mine and a bunch of other Giants fans over the last year, and even before that. And it's the fact that the Giants couldn't implement a smokescreen if the Meadowlands were on fire. Because anytime a report comes out, whether it's a beat writer or a national media member, says, oh, the Giants are interested in this guy, or the Giants really don't like this guy, it, you know, or whether it's the scout literally hugging and shaking Saquon Barkley's hand at the combine, no matter what it is, it's almost always true. And the fact that they've been linked to Daniel Jones numerous times by numerous people, and I don't think it's just, you know, them assuming that they're interested in him because of the David Cutcliffe connection, I am petrified that they're going to select Daniel Jones at 17th overall. Am I like totally wrong here? Are there like actual smoke screens with the Giants organization, or is it just, you know, what we see is what we get?
I know Dave Gettleman was what you see is what you get in Carolina. And I think he's what you see is what you get when it comes to the Giants. Well, by the way, just while I'm thinking about it, and I mentioned this on my podcast, and maybe I can't remember if I wrote it down anywhere, but since I'm on a Giants podcast, I'm going to mention it now while I'm thinking about it. Giants were at the NC State Pro Day. Obviously, Gettleman wasn't there, and Pat Shermer wasn't there because it was during the owners' meetings. But the wide receivers coach was working out all the NC State wide receivers, including heavily working out Kelvin Harmon and asking for Ryan Finley to throw specific routes to Harmon and Jacoby Myers and Steph Lewis to see how those guys got off press man coverage. And so my instinct tells me that I don't know if they would take Harmon at 17. Feels maybe a little bit early, but I think they could certainly be in play for Harmon at the top of the second round. Just maybe in the first if they really like him. Just throwing that out there while I'm thinking about it. To the Daniel Jones point, and it's relevant because all the Giants guys were in town in Raleigh already because they were already over in Durham for the Duke Pro Day to watch Daniel Jones. I think it's entirely possible they could take him. Now here's the thing that would concern me more than anything if I was a Giants fan, is that I am not entirely sure how much of this. I think that if Dave Gettleman was left to his own devices and was in charge of all football operations with complete carte blanche, that he would probably have proceeded with a plan that was at least, if we didn't, I don't know if you'd like it, but it would at least be uniform in its behavior. And what the way that he's operated to me leads me to believe that, and I always mispronounce his name because I'm from the South and I'm terrible, but the Mara family, it's Mara. Is it Mara? Mara? How did I?
Mara.
Yeah.
I always say Mara.
It's a bunch of ass clowns. Just.
I think that John Mara and Steve Tisch have been putting, probably more the Mara side, have been putting pressure on Dave Gettleman to change up the way he operates things. I think that they were embarrassed by how Odell Beckham operated on and off the field, and that they were fine with trading him even right after signing him, which is the most ridiculous trade of all time. You could have just franchise tagged him without taking, you know, avoid the dead cap space, all that. But that's another story. And I think the thing to be concerned about here is, are they telling Dave Gettleman, you need a quarterback now? We need a quarterback of the future. Find the quarterback of the future. Because I think Dave Gettleman has to be worried about his job. And if your boss is telling you to do something, even if you don't agree with it, and you're worried because you don't want to get fired, you're going to do that. And we saw that in Carolina with Dave Gettleman. I've heard, you know, buzz before that it wasn't his idea to sign Matt Khalil, that Jerry Richardson wanted him to pair Matt Khalil with Ryan Khalil. I know factually that you know, we see this all the time. Jerry Richardson did this with Marty Herney when he made him sign all those free agents after the lockout. But I think that there is a possibility that ownership could lean on Dave Gettleman and say, you need to find your guy. and that they might view Daniel Jones coming from that David Cutcliffe school, learning in the same system as Eli Manning, the Duke player, success at a school like Duke, high character guy. They could maybe see him as Eli Manning 2.0, and that would be my big fear if I'm a Giants fan.
And all that makes sense. And I know that. Listen, the Giants owner
makes no sense. It makes
no. It makes sense that ownership would do that because we've seen ownership. We know, like, if you've been around the Giants, I mean, I'm sure you know this, but as fans and as people who, you know, sort of, you know, watch the Giants and read about them every day, I think you know how much ownership has a hand in it, specifically Chris Mara, which is John Mara's brother, how much he's involved with the draft and with free agency. But the one thing I will say is that if they're saying, hey, Dave, you got to get your quarterback right now, we're not waiting another year, right? Well, then why not take pick number 37, you know, and add a fourth or add one of your fifths or whatever, and send it to Arizona for Josh Rosen? I mean, I think that if you're Dave Gettleman and you sit there and you are watching these two quarterbacks, you know, isn't Josh Rosen better than Daniel Jones? I mean, I think if you were to put those two together, you know, probably 29 out of 32 teams will take Josh Rosen over Daniel Jones. So my thing is, if you're Dave Gettleman, that makes perfect sense. You trade your second round pick and add on one of your late round picks and go get Josh Rosen, and then you have 6 and 17 to do what you want to do with them. So,
but then here's the problem, right? And this is the domino effect of the Saquon Barkley pick, is the Giants and John Mara saw what happened when he let Ben McAdoo, or I shouldn't say let Ben McAdoo, but basically gave the go-ahead and approved Ben McAdoo benching Eli Manning for Geno Smith, and saw the fan base uproar. And Weiss, we're on the same page. We're big Rosen guys. We would love him to be a New York Giant.
Yeah.
I just don't see them bringing him over in the second year of his rookie deal and causing that QB controversy during what should be Eli Manning's last season. And you know what? It just furthers the point that the Maras are incompetent and shouldn't be meddling in football operations. And it's unfortunate that I have to have that train of thought in the first place, that I shouldn't, you know, be poo-pooing the idea of bringing over a young, talented, and smart quarterback who would thrive in New York because of the fact that Eli Manning is still here.
Who probably, if had the choice, would want to come to New York instead of Washington or San Diego, except he might obviously want to go to New England. But, I mean, New York seems to be a logical spot for him. He fits what Pat Shurmur likes to do. So, I don't know, Will. I know ownership has a big hand in this. And listen, John Mara, Ethan has said it more than I have. Very incompetent, very overrated owner. And it would not surprise me if they're coming up.
Have the Giants won anything of substance after they, like, outside of riding Ernie Accorsi's rosters? Because, like, even the 2011 roster was still Ernie Accorsi's players, right, for the most part?
Yeah, for the most part. And then, you know, Jerry Reese added a couple of receivers, you know, Hakeem Nicks, Victor Cruz, Manningham, you know, but yeah, it was still, you know, Justin Tuck, Ernie Accorsi guy, Yumin Yura, Ernie Accorsi guy, Eli Manning, Ernie Accorsi guy, some players on the offensive line, Kareem McKenzie, David Deal, Ernie Accorsi guys. So yeah, there were still a lot of Accorsi players there.
Accorsi set up whoever was taking over for him, and to put them in perfect position to pretend, and they did. They won another championship. Yeah. And, like, if you're Dave Gettleman, I'm sure he thinks about that. If I'd taken over, he probably would have won the Super Bowl too. It wasn't about who was running the ship then. I just think you have to wonder, like, if you're looking at the Giants, what faith should you have in ownership or the front office that they're going to turn this around and fix it, given that we haven't really seen any sustained amount of success since that Super Bowl run with the two GMs ago players, you know what I mean? That would be my concern.
And that's the thing, like, you bring up a good point, and that's sort of the train that Weiss and I are on, but then you do have the fans that point out that one, you know, 11-5 season under Ben McAdoo, even though that was the one outlier in the 6 years since the Super Bowl. And you have the fans who point out that the Giants were the highest scoring offense in the NFC East, even though they ranked 17th or 18th in the entire league, right? You know, they haven't really done anything since the 2011 championship. There were, of course, these guys. And, you know, it does point out the fault of Jerry Reese where, you know, he tried to hit home runs on all these skill position players, you know, some more than others, Odell being, you know, the prime example. But you sort of let that core of that the trenches rot away. And then Dave Gettleman comes in and tries to do it, but at the expense of all the skill positions. You don't have a star, you know, wide receiver. You don't have a star quarterback, and you don't have a star pass rusher. So, you know, you bring up a good point. They really haven't done much since 2011, and it's something that, you know, Weiss and I have been harping on for a while.
Yeah, I mean, look, they had the boat playoff game against the Packers, right? I mean, like that was, I mean, like that's what it's remembered for. And I mean, I just think that when you look at the, I mean, they're just. I don't know. I mean, like my concern is that, again, I mean, Dave Gettleman, I think, has some really positive marks in his career as a GM. I think Saquon Barkley is awesome, but trading away Odell Beckham, you know, keeping some like Alec Ogletree, you know, you traded for him. And after the deal that the Rams gave him, you know, you're trading Odell Beckham. You're screaming about Jabril Peppers, who's a good player, but you know, I mean, it's like, it's not the same as getting a first round pick.
It's not.
Yeah. I mean, like, you signed Nate Solder, who was a good tackle for the Patriots, but probably only really good because he had Dante Scarnecchia coaching him up. And you know, you pay him all that money in free agency. I don't know. I just feel like the direction just isn't there, but I don't know that the Giants ownership is going to figure out a way to find somebody else to bring in and fix it. I mean, like this will sound insane, but, I'm not trying to like rustle the feathers of Giants fans, but would you trade, if you could do a wholesale swap of rosters, front office, and ownership with the Jets, would you do it?
Yes, I would. You know why I would do that?
Sam Darnold.
Well, the quarterback is one thing, but here's the problem with the Giants is that they are so immune to change. Like, when they fired Jerry Reese, Ethan and I thought, okay, this was, here comes the cleaning house. We're talking new philosophies, new members of the front office, you know, ownership probably taking a step back and not having their hands involved. And then they turned around, and let's listen to this, Will. They fired Jerry Reese, okay? Mm-hmm. Deserved to get fired. They turned around and they interviewed his assistant general manager, Kevin Abrams, his head of scouting, head of the draft, Mark Ross, a guy that used to work with Jerry Reese and Dave Gettleman, and Lewis Riddick. That was it. This was a GM job that hadn't been open, really, since before George Young was hired. Like, if you think about it, it went from George Young to Ernie Accorsi to Jerry Reese, and then they fired Jerry Reese, right? It had been open and we're talking since the 80s, 70s, and it was open, and it's probably a coveted job knowing how ownership just doesn't fire general managers, and instead of holding this wide search, they just hired Dave Gettleman.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, how incompetent is that?
It really, I mean, it felt like at the time, right, that they were going out. They were like, we need to find somebody who can fix this team that knows the, like, they were like, we need to roll it back to Ernie. You know, like, they were like, we got to roll it back and find somebody who can fix this team. And they wanted somebody to come in and say, I can build around Eli, because they had screwed up by benching Eli.
Exactly. They were looking for a yes man, someone to be like, yeah, I can do it no matter what.
Yep. And Dave Gettleman had been fired by the Panthers in pretty not embarrassing fashion, but he got fired like in training camp, right?
He got fired immediately after the draft.
I think it was later than that, wasn't it? Didn't John Dorsey get fired after the draft and Dave Gettleman got fired?
Oh, yeah. I think Gettleman lasted until like July or something.
Yeah. I mean, he was fired he was fired in July. Yeah. July 17th, he was fired, which is an absolutely bat smell insane time to fire somebody. Like, you're like, oh, now that we've completely built our roster, before we can make all our like every possible cut and personnel evaluation, let's fire our GM. But I think he knew that he'd waited a long time to get a shot. I think he knew that he might not get another shot, and when that Giants job opened up, he was going to tell ownership whatever they wanted to hear. And he also knew, as a disciple of Ernie Accorsi, exactly what they wanted to hear, right? He could come back and say, listen, Eli Manning still has it in his legs, in his arm. I can make this work. I'll build around him. We've got the talent. Don't worry about it. I'll get these guys under control. Odell Beckham's out here acting like a fool. I will get him. I will fix that and all these different things. And I think ownership bought it hook, line, and sinker.
But can I say one thing about ownership? And I don't want to stick up for them.
I would say you're safe on that.
The one thing I will say about them when it comes to Odell is what hurt them. You can say hurt their ego, hurt their feelings, pissed them off, whatever, is the ESPN interview. And that's one thing that I can agree with them on. I just gave you $90 million and you go do an interview, and I don't care that you throw the quarterback under the bus, the coach under the bus. They ask you if you want to be here. This, we're talking like 6-8 weeks after you got a $90 million contract. And what does he say? I don't know. I think to me, that was the breaking point with the Giants and Odell Beckham, where I think that a lot of us fans, even though we were still like, they're not going to trade Odell, they just pay him that money. They knew that shit, that's one thing that would really, that would be the breaking point. Like, he goes on national TV sitting next to Lil Wayne and they ask him, hey, you want to be with the Giants? And he just doesn't say yes.
It was a crazy interview. Yeah. And you're right. Like, that was after he'd been paid. I mean,
yeah. 6 weeks after he was paid.
I mean, they're the suckers there too, though, because they didn't like him. They loved him as a player, because who wouldn't? I mean, he's a historically great football player.
John Mara loved him. John Mara really, really, he wanted, like, you can ask, Lewis Riddick said that one of the first questions they asked me was not about Eli Manning. It was about Odell Beckham. Like, John Mara asked me that directly. Like, how would you deal with Odell Beckham?
But I mean, no, I think they loved him. I just think that they were bothered by his, like, the pissing on the hydrant thing and the, you know, like the video, the pizza box video and all. Yeah. And look, I get it. I mean, like, I understand why you're bothered by it. It's not what you want. You want to, you know, you want Reggie Wayne. You don't want Terrell Owens. And
right.
That's fine. I mean, who doesn't? But you know, I think at the end of the day, they got to the point multiple times where they realized he wasn't controllable in the way that they wanted. And so that when they got him to sign that contract, they basically said, hey man, shut your mouth, you know, show up, don't complain, be a true Giant, or whatever the phrase the Yankees fans use is, you know, be a, you know,
the Giants way.
Do things the Giants way and we will get you paid. And to Odell's credit, he did it. And I think that they believed that was going to be a permanent behavior moving forward. They paid him, not realizing that as soon as they paid him, Odell Beckham was going to turn back into OBJ. And then he did that interview. And I get it. That interview would piss me off, too, if I was the Giants. I'd be like, dude, we just paid you.
Yeah.
You don't know if you want to be here. Like, you're the one guy who, if you stick up for Eli Manning, people will actually believe you. Like, even Jalen Ramsey stuck up for Blake Bortles, bro. Like, you have to throw us a bone and say you believe in Eli and say you want to be here, because we just made you the richest wide receiver in football. And I get it. I mean, I get why they feel like he sold him down the river. But, at the same time, you traded Odell Beckham.
Yeah. And to Odell's defense, I think Odell was just saying, man, look, I'm not getting younger. And, you know, I'm coming off a broken ankle. I know you paid me all this money, but I know I gotta build my legacy. And for receivers, their legacies, while numbers matter, I mean, they need a quarterback with them to win Super Bowls. Like, you need a quarterback to win a Super Bowl. And for these receivers like Odell, I think Odell's mind is, you know, I have to win a Super Bowl so that I'm more so compared to, you know, the Randy, the Jerry Rices and the Reggie Waynes, Marvin Harrisons, those Hall of Fame receivers, rather than T.O. and, you know, Randy Moss, who were tough to deal with, but just great. You know what I mean? Like, he wants to be more in the class of those receivers that were part of Super Bowl teams that got into the Hall of Fame, and not ones that were headaches who just, you know, never won. And everyone points to that as to why they're not, you know, the greatest ever, or amongst, you know, or better than Jerry Rice, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because,
I get it. I mean, look, Odell is a weird cat. I mean,
he is.
You know, he wasn't happy about being like he wouldn't say he was. He wouldn't say he wanted to be in New York, and then he got traded to the best possible situation for a young receiver, and he's like unhappy because it's Cleveland. It's like pick your poison, dude. Do you want to be in Cleveland with Baker Mayfield, or do you want to be in New York with Eli? I mean, because you can't be in New York with Baker. That's not like.
Odell sort of envisioned him, Saquon, a young quarterback in New York.
Sure. Like, or maybe he looked at it like, oh my God, you know, these guys could have drafted Sam Darnold and they took Saquon. I think he doesn't like Saquon, but he's like, if I had Sam Darnold or a young quarterback, you know, this would be setting me up for the long haul. And instead they're just trying to roll with Eli. And I get the frustration, but.
Yeah. But let's say if they would have taken like Haskins at 6 this year, right. And they kept Odell, I think Odell would have bought into Haskins, Saquon and himself. Like he would sign up for that.
Yeah.
You know, in New York, like he would say, yeah, let's do that. Let's, you know, roll the ball. Let's go. But the whole Eli Manning thing, I think, you know, Odell just said, you know, we're not going to win with this guy. And so, interview, horrible decision, but that's what he was trying to say, is that we need a new quarterback.
Five weeks into Dwayne Haskins overthrowing him, and he'd be. I mean, I think Odell is. I mean, Odell's like Antonio Brown. But, I mean, the Raiders got a great receiver. I mean, granted, like Brown's obviously older, but I mean, if Derek Carr is inaccurate and the Raiders aren't winning and Antonio Brown's not putting up numbers, he's going to turn into a lunatic, and he's going to start spiking balls in Derek Carr's face. And Odell, I mean, I don't think Odell will do the same thing, but it's not that far-fetched to imagine the Browns starting out 2-4, everybody sort of panicking, and Odell and Baker getting in a shouting match on the sidelines. Like, nobody's talking about that possible outcome, but it is certainly, you know, at least in the realm of possibility, even if it's not the most likely one.
And I agree with you, because I think that there's a lot of pressure on this Browns team.
Oh, my God, so... Sure.
And they're still young. I mean, Baker's still young. You know, Odell's 26. You know, their core is still young, and they got a rookie head coach in Freddie Kitchens. So yeah, I could see that scenario too. If they start out 0-2, you know, going into that third week, it could be a problem where it's like, hey, you know, because you got a lot of emotions on that sideline. I could see it, but like you said, if you're Odell, you got to be happy. You're playing with a great young quarterback, but I get the sense that he wasn't happy leaving New York. I don't think he wanted to leave.
No, I mean Odell loves Odell, and he loves his brand, and he would love more than anything in the world, I think, to be in New York and to continue to develop that brand whatever it is.
Bringing a championship to New York would be different than bringing a championship to Cleveland. Okay. I know that sounds odd because Cleveland hasn't won. But just the market and how, I mean, listen, the New York market still idolizes Lawrence Taylor, even after all these, you know, arrests and drug abuses and all that. They still idolize Lawrence Taylor.
If you win a title in Cleveland, you're a folk hero. If you win a title in New York, you're a legend, a stat. Yeah. Like you, I mean, any big city, you know, whoever brings that title to Cleveland is going to be,
a regional superhero.
Yeah, sure.
Like, just like people just care about, like, LeBron brought a championship to Cleveland. Only Cavs and LeBron fans care. Yeah. Like, nobody else cares.
Yep, that's right.
You know, but New York, everyone's going to talk about, yeah, that's the guy that brought it to New York, and it's the big city, the big market. So I think maybe Odell envisioned him being a New York icon, even bigger than what he already was.
Definitely. Can we transition to some draft talk real quick before we wrap up?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Only Giants talk.
Giants talk. Kyler Murray is going number one, yes?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, probably, but I don't know. I'm starting to think they might go in a different direction. And I get, I mean.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I know Pete Prisco said on my podcast that he actually had Quinnen Williams going number one overall, and we had sort of
I think he's the best player in the draft by far.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's the safest prospect too, and I could absolutely see Steve Keim being a big Quinnen Williams fan. And as much as I mean, look, I mean, I think ultimately it comes down to we're not in the building. We don't know how these meetings are going with Kingsbury and Keim and Michael Bidwell. But I do think that the question has to be, you know, do you need Kyler to win? And if the answer is no, and if the answer to the follow-up question is, can you win with Josh Rosen? And the answer is yes, then I think you absolutely have to go with someone else up top, because to me, when you talk about value, and I think it's just important to get the value. You're in a situation where you can either have Quinnen Williams and Josh Rosen, or you can have Kyler Murray and whoever else you get for that second or third round pick. And I mean, there's a vast difference. Like I prefer Josh Rosen to Kyler Murray personally. Now that's coming out of college. We don't know. I mean, I still thought he flashed a lot last year, Rosen, that is, and I think he can still be good. To give up a number one overall defensive, like to give up the best defensive player in the draft, either Quinnen Williams or Joey Bosa, whoever you want, in pursuit of Kyler Murray, who might not necessarily change your team next year, I think would be foolish. So to me, I still think it's very much on the table for them to go any direction when they're on the clock. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they took Kyler Murray. You have the connection with Eric Burkhart, the Cliff Kingsbury's agent, who's also Kyler's agent. He was out there today. Adam Schefter reported, or were out there Tuesday. I just get my spidey sense tells me they're going to go with a defensive player and try to win now with Josh Rosen, because that is the most likely way to not get everybody fired.
Got it. So then where do you see Kyler Murray landing if he's not going to go first overall? I mean, you think the Raiders are committed to Carr? Any team going to trade up? I mean, if Kyler Murray's not going first overall, that sort of pushes every single quarterback back in the draft by a lot.
Yeah, it could change everything, right? And I think this, I mean, look, again, Kyler could go one. This whole discussion could be
right.
moot. But I think if it goes Quinnen, Bosa, Allen, Josh Allen, that is, and then the Raiders are on the clock, I think they would take Kyler Murray there because I think John Gruden likes him enough and thinks he could work in his system. And that I think he'll have a hard time passing Kyler Murray over at four if he's sitting there with three first-round picks, knowing he can come back and get defensive players later. So I think he would go to the Raiders. If he doesn't go to the Raiders, though, it becomes a total wild-card free-fall. I don't think Dave Gettleman would draft him at six, even if unless ownership stepped in and was like, we love that kid.
Right.
Taking him. I don't think Dave Gettleman would like – he's not Dave Gettleman's type at all. We don't think the Jaguars are going to take a quarterback now. The Bills won't. I don't think the Broncos will take Kyler Murray. And John Elway has basically said, I don't like short, mobile quarterbacks. Maybe the Bengals at 11. Probably the Dolphins at 13. Maybe the Dolphins at 13. I mean, that it would get – if he slides past the Raiders at four, I think it gets really, really tricky about where Kyler Murray goes. And then it brings into question – would John Elway or somebody draft Drew Locke with Kyler Murray on the board, which would
right. Yeah.
Just be insane, but I wouldn't put anything past the NFL draft. So I think it'll be four is his floor, but after that, it's a total wild card on where he could end up going.
Well, at six, let's say right now, who do you think the Giants would be looking at? I think everyone is starting to understand that it's most likely – going to be a defensive player, or you know, it could be a tackle too, but it's not, we don't think it's gonna be a quarterback. I mean, who do you think there at six? Is it Ed Oliver? Could Quinnen Williams fall to six? Who do you like there at six for the Giants?
I don't think Quinnen Williams can fall to six. That would be shocking. I mean, maybe he could. Look, somebody could trade up and get Haskins. I just don't see that happening. I think Dave Gettleman would sprint to the podium to grab Quinnen Williams. I do think that you're probably looking at some combination, and you guys can feel free to throw anybody else in here if you think I'm missing somebody. I think you're looking at some combination of Ed Oliver, Rashawn Gary, and Juwan Taylor. I would guess that those are the three guys that Dave Gettleman sort of has circled outside of Bosa, Quinnen Williams, and Josh Allen. I would also not be surprised at all if Devin White was in the mix there. I can see Dave Gettleman standing at the podium and praising how this kid blew me away. You know, I talk about going by the board and picking the best player available.
Gold jacket and all that.
Yeah, the same crappy spewed about Saquon Barkley. I would say the pool is outside of Bosa, Williams, and Allen, who I don't think will be there. I would say Devin White, Rashawn Gary, Juwan Taylor, and Ed Oliver are the most likely candidates.
Only guy I have a problem with there is Rashawn Gary.
Yeah, I could just see again.
That's one guy I would not be happy about. I love Ed Oliver. Like Devin White a lot, although I think Devin Bush at 17 might be better value.
I think Ed Oliver would be a very nice fit in that best your defense.
So I put out my dream scenario for the Giants on draft night, and it would be taking Ed Oliver at 6, and then 17 trading back with the Texans. I really thought this through. The Texans, who really need offensive line help, moving up from, I think, 23 to 17, and then giving up one of their seconds. They have picked 54 and 55. Then the Giants taking 37 and giving it to Arizona for Josh Rosen, taking 23 and taking Cody Ford, and then having 55 as a second round pick to, you know, take the highest guy on their board. I threw out Nasir Adderley, but it could be a receiver.
Yeah,
but I think that would be a great draft for the Giants.
I think there's a really good chance the Giants come away with a great draft. I think even when you look at the Giants draft last year, I know that we all complained that they took a running back over a quarterback, and I think it was a mistake. But all told, I mean, like, the Giants didn't have a bad draft, right? They had a good draft.
We would agree on that. I mean, we love Will Hernandez, Lorenzo Carter. I mean, the first four or five picks were home runs.
And Saquon Barkley was awesome.
Doubt about it.
He is the best running back in football. I mean, I think I don't think I would trade him for any other running back right now.
I think if you had a situation where the Giants were 3 and the Jets were 2 and it was Barkley, Darnold, and then Saquon, we wouldn't be complaining about this. I mean, we would be complaining about the Giants not having a quarterback, and I get that. But, I mean, would you trade Saquon Barkley for Josh Rosen?
I would, personally, yeah.
Okay. I would have rather had Josh Rosen at 3, too. And I would trade a running back for a quarterback. Now, I wouldn't trade him knowing that I could just give the Cardinals. Like Dave Gettleman could call the Cardinals right now and say, I'll give you 17 for Josh Rosen. And I think Steve Keim would probably do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, definitely. If you have the option to draft Kyler Murray and get another first-round pick, I mean, I do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're trading, you know, Josh Rosen for a first-round pick.
I mean, Dave Gettleman's first four picks, first four picks in last year's draft were really good. And I think there's a reason to believe that, you know, when it's all said and done and we look at the Giants, that we say, like, for instance, I don't want to spoil this because it's not posted yet, but RJ White, who is our draft editor at CBSSports.com, is doing a 7-round mock draft, and I'm looking at it in our CMS right now. And I'll just give a teaser. Maybe people will go check it out at CBSSports.com. I think it's coming out on Wednesday. But Devin White, Cleveland Farrell, and Greg Little. I mean, that's not the worst draft in the world for the Giants to kickstart things off.
That's a home run, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think if you added those three guys to the current Giants roster, I think they're going to be competitive. You're just not going to, if Eli completely goes in the tank, Peyton Manning in 2000 and
Peyton if he didn't have the Broncos defense.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Then the Giants are going to win 3 games. But if Eli is serviceable with that roster, it's not. I mean, again, it might be 8-8, and that might be the worst thing in the world. But it's not. It's not inconceivable to imagine it happening.
This is that's why I think that they should really go strong for Rosen, because he has a year off of his rookie contract. But you bring him in, you know, for let's say the 37th pick. I think that if they take Kyler Murray, unless Washington offers their first round pick, 37 is the highest they're going to get.
Yeah.
And if that happens, you got Josh Rosen, you got this quarterback, and then you continue to build your roster. And let's say Rosen flops, you only gave up pick number 37 for him versus pick 17 for Daniel Jones. So you can still build your roster and then hand the keys over to Josh Rosen, whether it's midseason or next year, whenever, and you'll be, you know, you'll just sort of take off in terms of being able to go and not have that rookie wall of Josh Rosen, because even though he might sit a couple of games next season, he still has that experience under his belt. So that's why I think Rosen makes the most sense for them versus taking one at 6 and obviously not taking one at 17.
One thing that's worth thinking about when it comes to Rosen and the draft is that, and I know Peter King mentioned this in his Football in America column, that it's possible that the Cardinals will wait until after they have the number one pick and they make the number one pick, and presumably that pick is Kyler Murray, that they will wait until they take Kyler Murray before trading Josh Rosen. Now, the easier thing to do would be to work out a deal now, trade Josh Rosen, and then take Kyler Murray. But the NFL might be saying, look, do not do that. This is the only drama in this friggin' draft. We need to keep it, like, keep people guessing until the day of the draft. Do not trade Josh Rosen until the day of the draft. And it would not surprise me at all if everybody was on board with that and listening to it and willing to play a game of chicken and ride up right until the last minute.
And but even if they don't have like a deal in place, why I think it makes sense for the Cardinals to wait until draft night is, let's say they take Kyler Murray at 1, and then, you know, let's say the Giants strike out on a quarterback they want and Denver strikes out, although Denver I don't think is in play for Rosen, but let's say, you know, the Redskins strike out and Miami strikes out, and, you know, New England's sitting there with all those picks. You know, let's say Washington at 15 says, you know what, we'll trade that for Rosen. Or Miami will say, you know what, we'll trade pick, you know, what is it, 12 or whatever. We'll give you that for Rosen. Because at that point, teams that have a quarterback on their board, they miss out on that quarterback, and then they might just be, you know, they might be just desperate and they're willing to give up that first that Arizona seems to be waiting for Josh Rosen. So that's one option that they could potentially this could be one option why they could hold on until draft night.
But I don't understand why they'd make Kyler. I don't know why they'd make Josh Rosen go through the entire offseason program and training and get to know Cliff and this and that, and only to just trade him a month later.
I mean, if it's the difference between a second and a first, why not?
Well, you know? I'll point out this, that has anything the Cardinals done the last, like, 24 months made a whole lot of sense? I mean,
no, none at all. I still want to know why Steve Keim still has a job.
I think Steve Keim's a good GM. And, look, maybe I'm biased because he's an NC State guy, too. But I think that he's – you see the – I mean, like, he – I mean, that team was dead in the water when he took over at GM. And he, you know, took him to an NFC title game. Had them – I think, yeah, NFC title game against Carolina, actually. And had them in a good position through some veteran different route acquisitions. But I'm not going to sugarcoat it. The last 24 months have been disastrous for him and everybody over there. So I think, look, he's on the. That's the other thing about the Rosen stuff. Steve Keim's on the hot seat. I mean, if he hires Cliff Kingsbury, and trades Josh Rosen and drafts Kyler Murray, and the Cardinals win 2 games next year, it's possible that Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim and Kyler Murray are out after a single year. I mean, I just think all of that is on the table, and it's such a risky proposition to go all in on that. But it may be, they may be at a point where they have to do that because they're so leveraged.
Yeah, no, it's such a weird situation. I'm looking forward to the draft.
It's nuts.
I got one more question for you, unless Weiss, you got something else. Why has there just been such a lack of chatter about Will Greer?
I don't know. I think people maybe just question if his production, maybe it was a result of the offense, and I don't know if he necessarily profiles as. I just think there's some guys like Ryan Finley's the same way who, it's like, all right, they had, you know, these guys are poised to have big years. And then you look at what they did in that final season and you're just not that impressed by it. And as a result, I don't think anybody in this class profiles as a, you know, quote unquote franchise quarterback per se.
Like, I would agree with that.
I mean, like, I wouldn't take Kyler Murray first overall. I like Kyler Murray. I think he could be great. I mean, plenty of coaches like him. But in this draft class, there are at least 5 or 6 defensive players I'm taking before I even consider a quarterback. I just think I wouldn't take a quarterback. I wouldn't take a quarterback if I was drafting in this class. I just wouldn't do it. I know that's easy to say. I mean, it depends on the situation you're in. But I think that the Will Grier stuff, he was, I had him in my, first round in my, last May mock draft for this year. But I just think that he sort of maybe lacks the requisite skill set that you want out of a franchise quarterback. And that's why he's probably more of a day two, day three guy.
I got one question for you. We haven't talked about him much, but he seems to be the one guy that if the Giants do take a quarterback at six, is Dwayne Haskins. How high could he go? How much could he fall? There's people talking about him falling out of the top 10. I mean, what do you think is how high can he go and how low can he go?
I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting. I know Lance Zierlein out of NFL.com pointed out that, you know, he thinks some of this Haskins stuff could be media driven, which is fascinating. Like, is Haskins suddenly going to be in a free fall? I mean, you're talking about a guy with a lot of production, but again, I mean, like, that system is so is just so well designed for quarterbacks to play well. I don't think that the Big Ten had the toughest challenges in terms of defensive matchups this year necessarily. And, you know, a lot of the stuff for Haskins, you know, you're talking about a minimal number of starts. I mean, even though the production was huge, you know, it's like Mitchell Trubisky, right? I mean, he, you know, you're talking about a guy where you only have a certain amount of body of work. And I think teams do tend to lean on whether or not somebody has a lengthy amount of success at the collegiate level. So I would say that, I'll say that the highest he could go is four, because John Gruden's a wild card. I don't think Gruden's going to take a quarterback at four if he can help it. But I think he would love to get a defensive player for Paul Gunther. But I'll say that the ceiling is four. And what's the floor?
Does he get past the Giants twice?
I think the floor is probably 15. I would be really surprised if the Redskins passed up on him at 15, right? I mean, right? I mean, I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but
unless they're in play for Rosen.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's the thing, is this draft is so weird. I mean, I just think, I can't imagine that Dave Gettleman would pass on Dwayne Haskins twice. So no, I'll say, let's say the floor is 17. That feels like a fair floor. And then if he falls past 17, you're looking at probably a trade back up situation, or maybe the Raiders package 27 and 24 and go get Haskins and are praised for getting a defensive player and Haskins, you know, the same way that the Browns were when they got Justin Gilbert and Johnny Manziel.
Fair enough. All right. I think that's about it. We've been going for quite a while. Will,
yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate the time. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Everyone, go subscribe to Will's podcast. Go follow him on Twitter at Will Brinson. And that's about it. Will, you got any parting words?
You can also check out, we're going to do a live mock draft show on April 18th on CBS Sports HQ, our 24/7 streaming sports network. It's free. Just go download the CBS Sports app on your phone or Roku or Apple TV or wherever else, Amazon Fire, any of those places, and you can just stream it for free 24/7. It's no hot take arguments, no politics, just straight football news or straight sports news. And we'll be doing that live mock draft show there. Subscribe to the podcast, and appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you very much, Will.
Thanks, Will.
Awesome.
Talk to you soon.